on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
That's why I wanted to write this book. I wanted to show that he has a place in the centuries-old, you know, Western esoteric tradition, you know, just for like the warrior-like stance to step up and show us this other reality at a time when, you know, we have to start waking up to this. You know, that's part of it, because it's beautiful and it's necessary, and it brings balance to life, and that's how we're, you know, that's how we're going to remember him. I think it was really, really awesome that his father went to an old Greek teacher of his to look for the right kind of inscription for his headstone. And he found he put in Greek, you know, true to his own spirit. And I was watching Lana Del Rey, you know, clip the other day where she was saying that it takes a lot of courage and bravery, like, to make your own path, because you got to shut out a lot of culture and you got to put up with a lot of garbage, you know, to really make your way and stay true to yourself.
Right.
And boy, Jim Morrison is like, he's the number one champion of that, one of them.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by singer-songwriter, artist, poet, and author Paul Wilde to discuss his first book, Jim Morrison, Secret Teacher of the Occult. Paul reflects on Morrison's shamanic character, his intellectual depth, and the influence of various mystics and philosophers on his life, and how Morrison fits into the Western esoteric tradition and his lasting impact as a countercultural icon and secret teacher. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Paul Wilde is a singer-songwriter, artist, poet, and author with a liberal arts degree in history. He joins me today to discuss his first book, Jim Morrison, Secret Teacher of the Occult, A Journey to the Other Side. Paul, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. I found your book really interesting. I had a friend, I remember when I was much younger, that was reading one of the biographies of Jim Morrison, and I kept thinking of her throughout the entire time while reading the book. But let me ask you this. I don't want to assume that the audience, actually, no, that's incorrect. I think everyone in the audience probably knows who Jim Morrison is. But let me ask you, when did your interest in him and how did that develop?
So I was born in Coral Gables, which is a city inside the city of Miami in Florida. And I'd say about age 13, 14, through my dad's second marriage, I had an older stepbrother who had an extensive rock music collection and a room filled with rock posters and one big, huge one of Jim Morrison, which got me really curious as to who that person was. And he loaned me his copy of No One Here Gets Out of Life, like the popular biography written in 1980 by Jerry Hopkins and Danny Sugarman. And that had me hooked and riveted. And, you know, I kind of emulated my stepbrother, and I loved rock music to begin with anyway. And, you know, started buying up all the records, and I had every Doors album by the time I was 14. So this began early in life.
Okay. Yeah. Jim Morrison's kind of an enigma though for us.
Yes. For how I guess when you want to talk about him as an enigma, I think that comes from, we all love him as a rock star and how he's presented to us in the music industry, in all the ways in which, you know, rock bands have to market themselves, et cetera, and so forth. But we all know that there's something very different about Jim Morrison. And where I was 8 years ago, when I discovered Gary Lachman's book, The Secret Teachers of the Western World, that's when, for me, the lights came on about who he was, like a real deep, significant part of him. And I was entering my own time of my life where I look back on, looking back on it, after reading The Stormy Search for the Self by Christine Stanley Groff, I was entering a time, I think, of rapid spiritual awakening. I was finally coming, like, you know, to books that I'd wanted to read. I'd always secretly deep down wanted to read and investigate. And The Secret Teachers of the Western World changed my life by Gary Lachman, who's a really generous, really nice guy, by the way.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
Yeah, I've interviewed Gary just once. I would like to have him back on. And I've read a few of his books. I haven't read that one. Does he talk about Jim Morrison at all in that book?
No, but every person that he talks about in that book was a part of him. And as I was reading it, I just kept thinking about Jim Morrison. I kept writing JM and the paragraphs, and by the end of it, I was like, wow, like I feel like I've like the lights have just come on. Like Colin Wilson, an author, we all love too. He talks about, the worm's eye view versus the bird's eye view. And the worm's eye view is like it's subjective and it's dark and you're very up close to the painting. And when you step back and the lights come on, you can see the whole picture. It's like, aha, and that's how, when thinking about Jim Morrison or reading this book, that's how I felt like the lights had come on. And then some other things, followed from them, and it just became too compelling not to want to write about. It's like, this is going to be my first book.
Okay. Well, speaking of Colin Wilson, there's an idea that he came up with that you discuss somewhat and kind of apply to Jim Morrison. And I think this is maybe a better way of digging into this whole idea of Morrison as an enigma, but it's this idea of Faculty X.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was wondering if maybe you could explain what that is and why it applies to Jim Morrison.
So Faculty X is an idea that came to Colin Wilson when he was living in Washington. He said that he did his best work here in America, and this is in 1966. And it's essentially the idea that you can suddenly feel that you have gone down a time pocket in history, like time just is no longer there, and you're actually in an imaginative way reliving historical events. You're or in a different epoch. You're in a different place entirely. And he also felt that this could happen to artists as well. And he felt that when Van Gogh painted the Starry Night, it was a combination of Faculty X in conjunction with something also called having a peak experience. It's this heightened sense of the world around you, that things have come very much alive. You're essentially awake. And I think with Jim Morrison, a good example of this is the poem that he wrote in high school, Hoarse Latitudes. And there's something that recurs in his art about, horses, and Hoarse Latitudes is that area that's in the Sargasso Sea off the east coast of Florida. And the Spanish galleons, to lighten their loads to catch winds, would throw horses, off the deck to lighten the load. And that must have been, kind of a traumatic thing to witness, horses drowning in the ocean. It's like, wow. And he wrote a poem about this. It's interesting because, and at the end of the soft parade, when he says, when all else fails, we can whip the horse's eyes and make them sleep and cry. It's some kind of attitude of just throwing everything overboard. I haven't quite figured out exactly where he's going with that, but there's a relationship there. But I believe that he really felt that he was there, that he's reliving this. And that's in essence what Faculty X is. I also think that when he was living out on Venice Beach and he was transforming in his own real rapid process of spiritual transformation and awakening, further awakening. That was a Faculty X experience, as well. Like he's way back in time. Venice Beach back then was not the Venice Beach it was today. It was the perfect place for someone like a poet like Jim Morrison to go open himself up. It was just dilapidated shacks around the canals and stuff like that. Nothing commercial about it. So it was quiet. You can get a sense of what Venice Beach was. There's a film called Cisco Pike. It's Kris Kristofferson's first film. And he's actually in this place called Olivia's Place, where Jim Morrison would hang out, where he wrote Soul Kitchen. You can see it in the film. And it's just quiet. It's very quiet. So I think this is an area where it was a lot like, walking the beaches in ancient Alexandria, by the Mediterranean. Like, in Egypt, with the sands and everything, like the desert region that's Southern California. It's Middle Eastern like, that area where the Western esoteric tradition was born. And I think that allowed him to slip into his well, allowed him to be more in touch with his secret teacher soul.
Yeah, there seems to be something about him that, reading your book, I kept thinking that he really was sort of the embodiment in many ways of how many people think of the 1960s. And in the sense of coming across or investigating different forms of consciousness, different forms of spirituality, you, and I think this is dead on right, refer to him often as embodying the Dionysian archetype. And I see that in other performers. I think that like Mick Jagger, for example, has a little bit of the Dionysian in him, but he doesn't seem to have that soul of a poet to the extent that Jim Morrison did.
Yeah. So I agree with all of that. Yes. I so with my second half of my book advance, I bought a couple of Rolling Stones tickets. So I went to go see him for the first time at SoFi Stadium. And I talk about Lawrence of Arabia in the book, a film that I think really influenced Jim Morrison a lot. And the Rolling Stones did too. And he was in a car with one of the members of the Doors, and he said, "God, do you think we can be as big as the Stones?" And like I mentioned in my book, he thought Mick Jagger was a prince among men. He really respected him. And when I went to go see the Stones, it turned into my favorite concerts of all time. Like, it was like going when I go see Lawrence of Arabia here in town at the old movie houses. The place is packed. The movie is timeless. It's fantastic. It's the same with the Rolling Stones. Like the songs are fantastic. The difference between, so Mick Jagger does embody the Dionysian archetype, and I discovered a book called Gods and Everyman: Archetypes That Shape Men's Lives by Jean Shinoda Bolen, a fantastic book. She also wrote one called Goddesses and Every Woman, and men complained like, "Hey, like we need a book about us too." So she very generously wrote one about for men. And in the chapter on the Dionysian archetype, she actually does mention both Mick Jagger and Jim Morrison in the same paragraph as embodying the Dionysian archetype in the 1960s. The difference is that Jim Morrison was someone like physically, he didn't look the way he'd looked like, his entire life with the Doors. He lost a lot of weight in 1965, and for a variety of reasons. And then he kind of regained it. Frank Lisanjo, his friend, said that, when he was not on tour, when he was around Los Angeles, like, he gained some weight back and the beard came out. And you could see him, riding in the cafes and restaurants and on Santa Monica Boulevard by where the Doors offices was, where he lived, the Altisonga Motel, that he went back into this Allen Ginsberg type look and way of life of being a poet, Karl Marx was the character that they identified with in On the Road. And Jack Kerouac based him on Allen Ginsberg. The sad-eyed con man, I think, is how Kerouac characterized him. So he wasn't naturally like that. It may be if he had more of a sense of, like, going into the gym and taking care of himself the way Mick Jagger does, things maybe Jim Morrison still be around today. But with Mick Jagger, he was always kind of slim, his build. And also his father was a physical education teacher. So it was in his mind from a young age to really take care of himself. I mean, if you go on YouTube, like, the man's 81 years old, and he has a 3.5 hour workout every day, which is
Wow.
really extraordinary.
Yeah.
So those are the difference there. But as far as the poetic idea, you're right. They're very different. I don't want to, say that, like, Jim Morrison's the greatest rock star out of them or anything
Right.
like that.
Right.
It's just with Jim Morrison, like, I love rock music. I love all kinds of rock stars, right? But with Jim Morrison, the physical stamina and how he looked and everything like that, allowed him to have the energy to be a rock star. But with him, you also get someone with his secret teacher self, who is also a poet, who could have been a scholar, who could have been a professor. We have to remember that I believe that when he's 20, 21 years old before the Doors, this is somebody that already has the intellectual maturity of like a 40-year-old with a PhD. His knowledge base is incredible, and he took all of this and he put it partly into his music. And there's just something, about him that finally I was like, the creator had this person live at this time. This has the sense of being preordained, because like the 1960s is the time when you look at it through the lens of the Western esoteric tradition, it's the first popular occult awakening to happen across the West. At no time in history were so many people opening up to that other reality. We're exploring things within the occult. It seems like the occult explosion, to quote Nat Friedland, a really good book that I quote. So they were ready for somebody like Jim Morrison, to celebrate, ascending up into cosmic consciousness, to be in contact, with that other reality, to let the right brain kind of like start making its way into, what I learned, like a paradigm to look at this is through Jean Gebser and the ever-present origin. We're at the breakdown of the mental rational stage of consciousness, so we're moving into the integral stage. And we're bringing the integral stage is to bring everything that we've learned in all of these past stages. And Jim Morrison was doing that. He was part of this evolution, whether he understood that about himself or not, that what he was doing. He worked so much of the unconscious. Now, he was not so much about trying to, state things in the way that, Colin Wilson does in nonfiction. His outlet was poetry and music and film. And I would say the interview as well. Like you said, the interview was going to be the art form of the future. And here we are doing this all the time on YouTube.
Yeah,
So, so.
I've never thought of it as an art form, but I'm gonna have to start
Right.
doing that. I suppose it is. I mean, yeah, conversation is in a way sort of a lost art at the moment, I think,
Yeah.
amongst people. We don't really know how to listen to each other and really feel what the other person's saying and get to know the other individual. And yeah, I can kind of see that. But let me ask you, you've mentioned a couple times now, and this is within the book, you refer to Jim's secret teacher self. What do you mean by that?
So a secret teacher is someone who is deeply in touch with another reality, and to the point where, with the kind of secret, with the people that Gary Lachman writes about and the secret teacher of the Western world, they come to the point where they feel compelled that they have to find a way to express this way of seeing life, and their peak experiences are. They're like Himalayan peak experiences. These are very intelligent, very alive people, and there's no pushing that down. There's really no way to turn away from that. They go inward. We all do that, but their stormy search for the self is a real storm. And I think this began with Jim Morrison at a very young age, 13, 14 in Alameda, his years in high school, then his years in college. And their awakening process, is such where they're just thrust out there to be people to point us to this other reality that we've been that he wrote. So I start the quote off in the book. Reality is what has been concealed from us for so long. And what he's meaning by that is like these past 400 years, like a couple hundred years after the Renaissance. The Renaissance was amazing because the Cosimo de' Medici. The person who really was like his great sponsor to make it happen. He wanted these occult texts like the Corpus Hermeticum, have Marsilio Ficino, translate that. And, a lot of great minds, people like Giordano Bruno and Leonardo da Vinci and all of them, they read it very closely and they were opened up by this. And this great flowering of art happened. And then after that, it was shut down for 400 years. Like anybody that believes in this stuff is, well, they're insane. And the Inquisition rose from that when the church was just not going to have, people waking up to the divinity and following something else and being that empowered. That's what I've come to realize and believe. Those attitudes started to change in the late 1800s. You had people like Madame Blavatsky and Aleister Crowley and Marshall Mathers and poets like William Yeats and did this. It's a whole huge awakening that starts. And these people run into persecution, et cetera, and so forth. So with Jim Morrison in the 60s, suddenly like, there's a big push where now we're going to really start, to open up to this other reality. Like, everybody is starting to become kind of a secret teacher now. Like we have to go forward. Colin Wilson wrote that we're on the cusp of a great evolution. And I believe that's what he was talking about. Like even In his philosophy, he goes into something called the new existentialism, where he disagreed with Maslow, saying that you can have, peak experiences at will. And in his biography on Colin Wilson that Gary Lachman wrote, Beyond the Robot, Gary Lachman writes about this phrase that sticks with me called, it protects us from that slide into the gulf. Like, we can't have the robot take over. We can't just go into autopilot. We can't just go into this comfort zone that our culture seems to want us to live in. It's really dangerous. So people like Jim Morrison just have that gut level daring to wake us up, to jar us up. He said he loved people to make us feel uncomfortable. And when you look at Jim Morrison, who he was, with what he did with the Doors and his whole persona, everything, he was to wake us up. In his poetry, he said, "I write this way to seize you." And you just, that's what secret teachers do. They find an outlet to wake us up to that other reality, because we have to know about that. It just brings balance to life. And that's what I think the 60s was, is like, we're pushing for balance for what we've kept down for too long.
Yeah, I one of the things that jumped out at me when reading the book was this idea of breaking through complacency, how so many people live their lives. And I see precedents for that in a variety of people. And one of my favorites is Henry David Thoreau, and he does that with Walden, that he wants to live deliberately, is how he phrases it. He wants to suck the marrow out of the bone of life. And this is that waking up people from living on autopilot. And it seemed to me that that is really the kind of awakening that Morrison was embodying, that he was exploring who he was and doing his absolute best to be true to his self.
Yes. And this is, I think that's where the part of him that comes in, that he's like a warrior. In some ways, I'm not saying at all that he's the reincarnation of Alexander the Great, but in a mysterious sense, he seems to pick up where Alexander the Great left off. Because Aristotle was his teacher, and he taught him that, all human beings have a desire to know, and this stuck with Alexander. And he founded the city of Alexandria specifically for the purpose that people can follow this deep desire to know, and that's going to put you in touch with another reality. And Alexander the Great was upset because, by the time he was in his early 30s, there was no other world left to conquer. But all that what awaited was that other world to be rediscovered. And that's what Jim Morrison did in his way. And it's kind of like picking up where Alexander the Great left off and being a warrior against that complacency. He wrote that we're perched headlong on the edge of boredom, reaching for death at the end of a candle. Like, we're desperate with all of this. But if it's almost like, if you can, Colin Wilson like says, like, I dealt with boredom, and then I end up writing The Outsider. Like, he allowed it to lead him to, write this book about the great romantics, because he wanted to know why these great romantics were having such highs and such lows that led to like terminal illness and suicide and everything like that, because they were discovering that other reality, and they saw how beautiful that side of life was. But and in their time, there's still no real place for that in society, and they're just trying to get back to that. And that's Van Gogh commits suicide a year after he paints the Starry Night. And in his suicide note, he wrote, misery is just going to go on. Sadness never ends. Jim Morrison was the same type of person when in The American Prayer, he writes, could any hell be more horrible than now and real? I learned that we can all learn that. There's in the documentary, 3 Hours of Magic, the Jim Morrison special. You can tell right off the bat that Jim Morrison is a real romantic, because Robert Krieger tells a story, though. This is pretty deep. One night he was in a very, very depressing mood, and he wanted to kill himself. And Robert Krieger and John Densmore spent the night talking him out of it. And then at the beginning of the sunrise, he goes out for a walk, and he comes back in a completely different mood, feeling really euphoric, saying that he's seen the light and that on his walk, he wrote the lyrics and the melody for People Are Strange in one of their best songs. So Jim Morrison's highs and lows were very much like the romantics that Colin Wilson writes about, in The Outsider. And this is a book that Jim Morrison was familiar with. Like he read this in high school. And Robert Kruger says that they had to have this kind of conversation with him, a few times at least. So kind of like where I was going with this. I guess his highs and lows were so if I so to go back to Nietzsche. Nietzsche said that, he who breathes in the air of my writings, understands it's the air of the heights and it can kill a man. And I think what he was talking about was the kinds of peak experiences that secret teachers like Jim Morrison had, like the kind of people that Colin Wilson writes about. These are peak experiences of like a Himalayan quality. And the falls from here are going to be, really deep because one, there's nothing in society to catch you this way in the sense that you can be recognized for this and you have some reference in the culture for what is happening to you. You're just an outsider. And this just leads to all kinds of, it can lead to suicide. You can just had enough. And I think Jim Morrison was one of those people. Like he once complained that, the collective archetype is just getting me down,
Nietzsche came to mind quite a bit as well, and you of course write about him, but he came to mind in the sense of the Dionysian, but also this idea of the Übermensch, where my understanding of that is the Übermensch has to kind of create their values. But it's interesting when you look at Nietzsche, especially like in the Spoke Zarathustra, the very beginning, you have Zarathustra that has to go back down into the world. And I think that that's the great challenge that people like Jim Morrison have to struggle with, which I think you were just expressing, is that you can have those highs, but then you have to kind of come back down into the world. And how do you maneuver that? How do you manage that?
That's so the common thread throughout all these types of romantics who are secret teachers and touch that other reality is that, well, first Jim Morrison said that, we write poetry and we make music and we do all these things so we can reach out to other people about who we are. Antonin Artaud, when he, the playwright living in Paris, he was like that too. Like, I have to figure out a way to have an outlet. I have to, and he found that, with the theater. And Jim Morrison was the same way. Like, I have to find an outlet. I need to make a place for myself in society. And they're doing new things. So I can see why, Nietzsche speaks, to people like them, because you're doing new things, and new things are going to require are new. You value something differently, and those new values are going to kind of bring about a new kind of morality. And that's what I think Nietzsche saw when he was writing in the late 1800s. He felt like he wasn't going to be understood until the late 1900s, early 21st century. And here we are, and everybody is, doing their own thing and di discovering themselves and making a way for society in which they're trying to express, all the enormous things that are going on within them. Like, spiritual awakening is like, Columbus discovering America for everybody. And it's happening now like it's never happened before. Like the 60s, what was going on then, it seems to be coming back in a very, very big way, such that it's not going to recede. I'm hoping it doesn't, recede into something as dark as the 70s had, like this backlash. So I think to go back to your question, secret teachers are trying to look for an outlet. They feel destined to express this, and they a lot of them got real inspiration how to do this in Friedrich Nietzsche, and I think Jim Morrison did too. In the interview, there's a really revealing interview on YouTube with his sister and his father, and his sister said when he graduated from high school, like, he asked for like the full volume of Friedrich Nietzsche. And she said, like, most 18, 17, 18 year olds, like, they want a new car or a trip to Europe or something like that. Like, that's not very typical. Like, so that tells me that he's in a very deep place where he's looking for he's open to counsel and instruction on how to become what he feels is he's going to be the kind of writer and artist and poet he's going to be in the future.
It was really amazing to read how much of a voracious reader he was in high school. Like you said, that he kind of graduated high school with the knowledge of a 40-year-old with a PhD.
Well,
And
college, I don't know about high school, but definitely after UCLA.
for sure. One of the things that kind of comes to mind too, I or that we probably need to discuss, at some point you wrote that in order to, I'm trying to find my actually, let me back up. I'll probably edit a little bit of this out. I'd like to discuss Jim as a shaman because you discuss his shamanic initiation, and you wrote, and I found this fascinating, and I wish that we had, and maybe there is that I am not familiar with, but I wish we had video of this. But you wrote that Jim went into shamanic trances and ecstasies on stage, making all kinds of wild animal sounds while drummer John Densmore thrashed away on his drums to aid Jim in summoning the healing magic of the spirit world.
So, in Jim's first poetry book, The Lords and the New Creatures, the first part of his notes on vision, and he said that he wrote this in his junior, senior year at UCLA. And this would be 1964. It's my suspicion that he might have read closely Ritchie Elliott's Shamanism Archaic Techniques of Ecstasy, which is translated into English and came out in 1964. And being UCLA's where Carlos Castaneda's giving classes, I find it hard to believe that that book would not be in that library and that Jim Morrison would not have found it because he found every other really good book to read across the entire spectrum of the occult. So I was rereading Notes on Vision the other day, and he brings up alchemy. He's very astute about alchemy and its relationship to cinema, experimental cinema in particular. He's very astute about history. He's very astute about the darker sides of American urban life. And he kind of ends it with these thoughts on shamanism, about how what the seance is all about, the shaman's role in society. And I realize that it pops up in the notes on vision, the conclusion, where to him it strikes him possibly as a solution. As a way to reconnect with what heals us that is very much connected to nature and the spirit world. I mean, shamanism is the oldest, I don't want to call it a religion. It's the oldest spiritual type practice, in human history. It goes all the way back to, very, very ancient times in Russia and Siberia. And if you're going to move forward into the integral stage of consciousness in the right way, then you're going to be reaching all the way back into the archaic. Which is where shamanism is born in the archaic structural of consciousness. So Jim Morrison just saw that as a solution, where we can get further healing magic to push us, more in touch with this other reality. And then he said, but then he wrote in his journals that I know he said in an interview that he didn't think that he would be doing anything shamanistic, just a couple of years later with the Doors. How this came about is really interesting. He graduates from UCLA. His parents stopped paying the rent on his Goshen Avenue apartment up by the VA hospital in Westwood. His girlfriend Mary says, "Look, all you know is books. Go find yourself. You're not moving in with me." He goes down to the beach. He doesn't want to go into Hollywood because he doesn't like Hollywood. He goes to study cinematography, but he's more interested in like the experimental avant-garde aspects of it, which doesn't exist in Hollywood. He flirts with the idea to move to New York City to work with Jonas Mekas, who's considered the godfather of experimental filmmaking, a pretty amazing person in his own right. But he can clearly, he's like, if I move to New York City, then I'm gonna have to get an apartment and get a job. It's cold. I'm gonna be in charge of a lot of equipment and all that kind of stuff. That's not me. So he just moves to the beach and he just opens up and he starts to write. He's very hurt by the breakup with Mary Werbelow. That was very hurtful. The end is about that. The crystal ship. Is him pining for that kind of love again that I write about in the book. But at the same time that he's with when you talk about the shamanism, you have to talk about his favorite poet too, Arthur Rimbaud, who was kind of a shaman himself, in which he talks about in his that famous letter to Paul Demeny, that he, the mystic has become a seer. You put yourself through a prolonged disorganization of the senses to attain the unknown. The key word being prolonged. And that's I start to really think about like what's going on there. Well, he loses all that weight, and then he's doing copious amounts of LSD. The LSD that you could buy it over the counter back then, and the LSD back then was much, much stronger than you can buy today. And he was deliberately taking copious amounts of drugs to just really open his mind, to blow those doors of perception open, to break apart what William Blake called the mind forged manacles in your mind. And I think to the level that Jim Morrison did that, he really opened himself up to the spiritual. This is also someone who had the physical stamina to do this. Jim Morrison was really strong physically. He could do the butterfly stroke with ease. That's a really, it's just the hardest stroke in swimming. And he was just physically built to be able to withstand, what he was putting himself through. I think that for as much beauty as Jim Morrison was in touch with, and as much emotional beauty and experiences he had, those experiences were also deeply terrifying. They were trials, and I think he put himself through some very frightening experiences, on LSD and all the different drugs that you would do with it at the same time. I think that most people would just psychologically crack and break. It's that powerful. And in with shamanism, in the world among indigenous peoples, it's always like the strongest, member of the tribe who's chosen to be the healer. And that's who Jim Morrison was. I think I opened the book up that one chapter up with this dude. Thank God that there is someone, with the ability to be in touch with the spirit world this way, who can heal the tribe this way, because it's not easy. It's very dangerous. It can almost, turn you into something kind of psychopathic. It's a real, you're taking yourself like way out of rationality. And somehow he was able to return, with songs that allowed him to open up, on stage, that shamanic part of himself. You are seeing at times someone, it just feels like the spirits are there. Even in some of the videos that I've found that have come out on YouTube, I'm like, wow, like this feels like there are presences in the stage that are coming out of him, that are surrounding him. This goes back to his encounter when he was 3 years old. He said that the most important experience of his life was when he came upon the traffic accident in New Mexico, where he says that, those dying native workers that he saw, like they leapt into his soul and they stayed there. And he attached great significance to that. And after, walking with Jim Morrison and doing all this research and writing this book, I believe him. And now that I wrote about the circumstances surrounding the area that those native workers lived in and what was going on, it's deeply mysterious. To me, it's just the creator's way of saying, this is an area where like nuclear bombs are being built. This is not exactly a part of life. These natives in the area are now like, they have to go work at this place, and their culture has been disturbed. That's where William S. Burroughs was once a student at the ranch school for boys. That Oppenheimer, who was also a student there, came later on to buy and, turn into Los Alamos, and the Manhattan Project was done. LSD was, basically was discovered in 1943, the same year that, Oppenheimer assembled everybody to start the Manhattan Project. I find it's almost as if like, the creator's making the creator's moves, and the dark forces are making their moves being countered. And I think that's who Jim Morrison was. He came back to just say no. He was here to say no. We're not gonna stay stuck in this, in this very left-hand path, left brain, breaking structure, because it doesn't want to die. Like he's at the same time that Jim Morrison is becoming this shamanic person, Los Angeles and it's just sprouting all around him, going like in that other direction, and Venice Beach. So the fashionable home for the beatniks that we all know is like Greenwich Village in New York City and North Beach in San Francisco. But like the tough, gritty beatniks who could care less, who are equally as talented and visionary, but who could care less about fame and all that. We're in Venice Beach. People like Lawrence Lipton wrote The Holy Barbarians and everything like that. And that's who Jim Morrison was. It's just, it's surprising that like he is the one who became like, like the famous one. And I don't think one writer said that, his rise to fame is kind of accidental. I don't think so at all. I think it was just, it was part of the magician in him. It was part of him, making and his voluntarily just making an agreement saying, yeah, I'll do this. I will play this role and, go out on stage and do this for people. It's generous. Jim Morrison was a generous person. It takes a lot to go from, you want to be a writer and a filmmaker and you want to have this private life and you have like your circle of friends and you publish your books, you make your movies, you go back home, to just opening yourself up completely on stage to strangers and all kinds of people. Suddenly it's just, it's for the world. And that's, it took him a while to open up on stage. And that is actually a really hard thing to do for someone who is as private as Jim Morrison. But, I don't know if he knew himself astrologically. He had a, his north node is in Leo. And what I've learned is that your north node is all about where you find your fulfillment. And you work hard to go in that direction. And that Leo North Node, it's like, no, you're meant to be in front of people, being the champion of something that's really important for humanity this way. Mick Jagger has his North Node in Leo, and his sun sign is in Leo. So he's got so much to make him such a great rock star, right? But to go back to the shamanic, he said that he just didn't realize that that's what he was going to be doing. Later on in life. But Jim Morrison's Venus is also in Scorpio. Mine is too. And I realized that Marlene Seven Bremner also, her Venus is in Scorpio. And it'd be, not that your Venus has to be in Scorpio to study the occult or anything, but what I've learned is like we have like a real like desire to go deep down into it. And so did Jim Morrison. And that's why the lights just went on when I discovered that he found The History of Magic and the Occult by Kurt Seligman when he was in high school and he kept it for years. I automatically knew that there was a relationship, between that and Secret Teachers of the Western World and Colin Wilson's occult and everything like that, in which shamanism, is partly discussed.
And I think that it might be important just to take a beat here to in the sense of the occult, because I think so many people have this false notion of what that entails. Probably not my listeners or my audience, but the occult is just the hidden, the esoteric, the secret.
So this is a word that at long last must finally be completely disabused. And I don't know if it's because of the how it sounds, like the double consonants, the CC and the LT, I don't know. I read somewhere that there's a frightening quality to things that are less than 90 degree and less angles. Maybe it has that quality to it, I don't know. The occult is just that which is hidden. Faculty X is a hidden occult power that we have in the mind. There, it doesn't have, there's nothing satanic about it. There's nothing dark. There's nothing, like that about it. It's just part of that other reality that is also part of our minds. Much of it, like in the right brain, that has kind of been like suppressed for like a long time. Gary Lachman writes that the right brain has been kind of running, like a guerrilla warfare with the left brain for quite some time now. That has to change. So the occult is a word that has to be disabused. It just means that which is hidden. I mean, we can talk about this all. There's a difference between, Jim Morrison, the mystical poet who's open to occult experiences, and actually engaging in activity in which you're trying to make an effort, you're trying to affect something that is in reality. That goes into the area of a different type of magic. I think Jim Morrison was much more about like, the ancient Egyptians. The ancient Egyptians didn't have religion; they were religion. Their way of life was deeply in touch with that other reality. They saw the land of Egypt as like a reflection of heaven, and that's where we have like the whole idea that goes back from Hermes Trismegistus, as above, so below. That to me is a very beautiful thing. That's how I look at life, and that's how I want to see life from that standpoint. I think that's how Jim Morrison, a lot of us want to see that way. Life that way too. The The other way is to see life is that mental rational way to see life, that where the occult has no place in it, that which is hidden has no place in it, because you can't prove it with like a scientific method. So Gary Lachman says that the secret teacher kind of has like both the scientist slash mystic to him, if there's a balance, whereas the pure scientist doesn't have the mystic to him, doesn't entertain the idea of the mystic. Now, that said, I believe Albert Einstein, didn't buy that at all, because to me, what a statement that I think made a large impression on Jim Morrison was the statement that Kurt Seligman chose to open the history of magic and the occult with, which is a saying something Albert Einstein said, is that the fairest thing that we can experience is the mysterious. That's an amazing thing for a scientist of Albert Einstein's, caliber to say. And Jim Morrison and on what it said that he had a book on reptiles, and that the opening statement of the book on reptiles had a very big effect on him. And I think that opening statement that Seligman chose had a very big effect on him too, because that's Jim Morrison. He's really mysterious. He has a great, erotic power to him. What makes him such an intelligent, fantastic artist is the way he appropriated that, in this way that reminds me, he's like something that pops out of a Hieronymus Bosch painting, or something that pops out of like an Antonin Artaud play, or something like that. And let's see, where exactly was I going with this?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, well, I just wanted to clarify the occult, because I
That's
think,
right. Okay.
that there are misconceptions, and it's more along the lines of the mystery, the mystical, than any kind of, like you said, it's not devil worship, as the
No, not at all. No.
Christians like to say, and things like that. But it's scary. It's very
Well,
scary for a
it's
lot of people.
so like I guess when you talk about this, like you kind of lose yourself. I forgot what I was going with this. Yeah, about the occult. Well, we're going into the direction of the infinite. We're going into the direction of the unknown. And this is why we read Friedrich Nietzsche, because Nietzsche went into the direction of that unknown. Like in a sense, he was like the first big beatnik. He leaves college for a variety of teaching college, where he's like the youngest professor in all of German academic history, and he opens up his mind as he's traveling to like the most beautiful places in Europe, experiencing thoughts that are like peak experiences, the likes of which we can't possibly understand, that fortunately we can get. And we can read in the books that he left us, and Jim Morrison was that way too. This is dangerous stuff, and Nietzsche said, like, live dangerously, and that's part of it. That Venus and Scorpio placement is also like we love dangerous things. Like, I like riding motorcycles and things like that. We're kind of attracted to danger to begin with. So there's also all there are like an automatic, if you want to entertain, the astrological aspect of all of this. There's that placement that kind of pushes you in a dangerous position, because you just want to test the balance of reality, which is what Jim Morrison is all about. I mean, that's why I thought Lawrence of Arabia had a great effect on him as well. Lawrence of Arabia comes out at the same time that the Rolling Stones are formed in 1962, and here's someone that just wants to go out into the desert and just becomes someone else, like puts himself into a very dangerous environment. Talk about just embracing the unknown. Lawrence of Arabia kicks off the 60s with that message. This is someone who's, he's in uniform, he's in the military, he's a lieutenant, a serving line officer in the British military, who just, basically says, like, I'm going off in the desert and I'm going to help these people, like, beat the Turks, and at the same time, prevent the Western world from like making them into another colony. And he just transforms himself. Suddenly he's wearing, the keffiyeh, and he's this great hero to the Bedouin peoples that he's trying to unite against all of this. In other words, like, I don't want you all to lose like the great magic that you're in touch with out here in the desert. I love you for this. I don't want the Western world to encroach upon this. And I think that spoke to Jim Morrison a lot too. And he asked me not to mention his name. But I was able to confirm that he was very interested in this movie when he was a film student at UCLA. So all of these, it's easy to get lost when you're talking about Jim Morrison, because there are so many elements to this really amazing artist, to consider, that just all come together in this way where he embodies so many elements of past secret teachers and the past epics of the Western esoteric tradition and all of the artistic things that were going on in the 100 years, before he rose up with the doors, that just make him this person to get us in touch with that other reality. And I just came to the conclusion, like, you need people like Jim Morrison for this to accomplish this task.
And as you were speaking, I was thinking that we keep getting this message for well over 2,500 years. I would suggest that we keep getting this message of being true to ourselves and breaking through. And you can see this in Plato and the Gnostics. I was thinking in terms of the Gnostics and the Archons that keep us embedded in these systems that we're prisoners, and that's the idea that we're constantly that most of us are prisoners, and someone has to come and break those chains, but it often doesn't end well for them. And I
No.
think in the case of Jim Morrison, he burned very brightly, but for a very short amount of time.
Yeah, yes, he did. It's kind of like the opposite of Bob Dylan. Like Bob Dylan's a comet, like he keeps coming back around, And
Good
Jim
metaphor.
Morrison, Jim Morrison, he saw himself as D. Moriarty and on the road, like he just something that just like sparkles, really brightly, careening like a falling star across the sky, and then poof, like you're gone. Like who was that? Very mysterious. That's what spoke to Jim Morrison. That's D. Moriarty had the kind of energy that Jim Morrison identified also with the book and On the Road. And as far as so another part that told me that Jim Morrison is a true secret teacher is that the sad part of all this is that so the 60s allowed Jim Morrison like just enough of a platform and an acceptance in society where there could be a successful rock band and he could do the things that he wanted to do as a secret teacher as a lead singer with the Doors. Unfortunately, at the same time, there was just a formidable conservative movement that was just not going to have any of it. Also stacked against him the fact that he was the son of one of America's like most outstanding military officers. His father went to the Navy and said, "Look, I'll resign because of my son's frequent public arrests. I don't want to continue to embarrass the Navy." That's a big deal. And Jim Morrison is not he's not dumb. Like he knows or he suspects, or some part of him suspects that it's possible that his very flamboyant rebellion is going to draw the retaliation of the United States government. Like, you're not going to go do this. Like, the Morrison family had a long tradition of service to the military. And Jim Morrison's nothing like that. He went in a completely different direction. It's a very complicated story, him and his father. His father doesn't seem to have done his best to try and appreciate him, doesn't really know what he was about, but saw that he's very important to a lot of other people and respected that. I don't think Nixon in the White House, and I don't think Hoover at the FBI did, because the Miami show in which he was alleged where he exposed himself, 4 days after, well, on the day that the Miami police issue an arrest warrant, that's the day that the FBI agents in Miami, send a description of the show directly to Hoover's office in the FBI. And Jim Morrison had an extensive file. And then he was convicted of a crime that he did not commit, that was later pardoned. So, I've thought about this. Like, you're Jim Morrison, and your name is all over the news across America. And you walk around going, I've done a lot of things, but I did not flash the audience. I didn't do that. And there's no witness testimony. There's nothing like that. And my case is on it. He goes to Paris to find himself again as a person, take a break, be a poet. But he has to come back to the United States. He's telling himself, what's going to happen to me when I go back? Like, I've thought about this. His lawyers are telling him, look, this is going to get off on appeal. There's a very high chance it's going to get off on appeal. But if I were Jim Morrison, I would be saying to myself, yeah, but I've already been convicted of a crime I didn't commit. And if I lose on appeal, I'm going to Raif for prison for 6 months. That's Florida's most notorious prison. That's a place where I can be killed. That's a place where I might not make it out of. And he's in Paris. One of the rooms he stays at is where Oscar Wilde died. where he was trying to recover from a prison sentence for having been for 2 years in England, where he was convicted on moral grounds.
Right.
I find that strange. I think this made him very, very anxious and scared, because he knows the kinds of fates that met people like him before him, with intolerant government authorities that very clearly have it out for him. Giordano Bruno, he made the mistake of going back to Italy. He went back to Venice. He thought, well, they'll forget about me. It's been a while. And he actually went back to Venice, did some of his best work for the person who put him up and patronized him. And then, that man unfortunately found out who he was and reported him to the authorities in Rome, and the Inquisition got him, imprisoned him for 7 years, and then executed him in 1600 at the stake. Strange. The esoteric tradition begins in Alexandria. In Alexandria, Virginia, is where Jim Morrison discovers the history of magic and the occult, which is all about the roots of that. And then he comes to Venice, California, where he opens up. Lawrence Lipton wrote a poem in which called, Bruno in Venice. I put that in the book. It's almost where he imagines Giordano Bruno coming to Venice here in California, where, he's paraded, to his execution. It's almost like foretelling Jim Morrison's arrival in Venice. Giordano Bruno and Jim Morrison are similar people that way. The same thing happened to Hypatia in Hellenistic Alexandria, one of the really dark moments in the Western esoteric tradition. They didn't want to have anything to do with somebody who was that empowered. Her story has a lot to do with gnosis. They were having ecstatic trips of the mind back then, in which the secrets of the universe are being revealed without having any kind of technology that was later proved, like her discovering like the ellipses of planets around the sun. So with Jim Morrison, they're not going to have him waking up America's baby boomers to cosmic consciousness and connection to the spirit world and opening up to your divinity and the idea that you don't need the American way of life, you don't need the American dream, you don't need to, as Jim Morrison sings in the song, spend a life building for a shallow grave. You have all this magic at your feet. You do that, you're not going to have any power over people anymore. You know what I mean? And they're not going to have that being taught to children through Jim Morrison. So they found their way, I believe, in Miami to find a way to corner him. I mean, it's more complicated than that. I think, like with people like Hoover, it's also like a projection of their own insecurities and their own jealousies and their own envy. Here's this fantastic looking human being who's so intelligent, so generous, and so loved by so many with these amazing songs and generating all of this. And unfortunately, people can't contain, their insecurities and their jealousies and their envy, especially those in power. And Herbert Hoover, who was a closet, he was a gay person who had to closet that, to stay in power, was one of those kinds of people. Benny Goodman, the judge that sentenced him in the case, he was convicted by a three-man, three-women jury and did criminal court in the fall of 1970. It's weird. All this was going on at the courthouse right when I was born, just down the road. And right when my publisher, Ehud Sperling, was discovering the rejected knowledge for the first time in New York City, that led him to start Inner Traditions 5 years later. That told me that my writing this book was like on the right path. Benny Goodman on the case was found was stripped of his judgeship a few years later for corruption. So these people just can't be trusted. And it's interesting too, Miami, a lot of people don't know, is in 1925, another secret teacher, Prahamanza Yogananda, who brought yoga to the United States, started the Self-Realization Center in Pacific Palisades. He was welcomed in every American city but Miami. In Miami, they accused him of like bringing a love cult with him, and they read him the Riot Act, and like the mayor like said, you got to go, you can't stay here. You stay here, we're going to arrest you and put you in jail. So what Yogananda, ran into, Jim Morrison ran into. I myself personally, like, I don't have to go into that because it's about Jim Morrison, but I grew up in a very conservative Roman Catholic family in Miami, Florida, and they, Jim Morrison, they're going to have none of that. So I understand the kind of, the level of intolerance that was met here. So that's the sad part with people like Jim Morrison, secret teachers, these people in touch with another reality. He was one of those secret teachers where he was born in an epoch where there was just enough where he could find validation and fulfillment and success with his ventures and a place in history that is relevant to our evolution, which is what the Western esoteric tradition is all about. And unfortunately, there was also that there to make his life a living hell in the end.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened. France doesn't have an extradition treaty. That's why, Roman Polanski,
Right.
went to France. That's why his warrant is still there at the Santa Monica courthouse because they can't get him. I don't know if his lawyers, Jim Morrison's lawyers, told him that. But like I'm living in Paris, and I'm this famous guy, and I'm convicted of something I didn't do. And there's no internet back then. There's nothing like that. I've got the money to maybe pull a disappearing act. Like John
Yeah.
Densmore in an interview acknowledges that if there's anybody who could have done that, it might have been Jim Morrison. I think in today's day and age, it would probably be really hard to keep that a secret. I'm inclined to think that he did pass away, in Paris. It's still something that's shrouded in a lot of mystery when you look into
Right.
it.
Right. Yeah, there's no official cause of death or anything like that, is my
No,
understanding.
Ray Manzarek was very upset that Bill Siddons did not lift the coffin to identify Jim Morrison's body. Bill Siddons was very young, the Doors manager, like 19, 20 years old. He just didn't think to do that. He thought like he was surrounded by the Paris authorities in the apartment. Pamela Curson was there, like, hey, it's a done deal. Like, I don't have to check anything out. Like, Jim Morrison's in that casket.
Yeah. Do you
And he
think
ends
he,
up in, sure, go ahead.
oh, I was just going to ask, do you think that given what he was doing in terms of kind of embodying this Dionysian spirit and shamanic spirit to try to wake people up, do you think he would have stepped away from that? I mean, it's hard to be in someone else's mind, but it was so challenging. And like you said, with the false charges against him, I just wonder if he would have been able to step off the world stage.
So that's what I think probably what he wanted to do. He was struggling with a lot of things before he left to Paris, is that he was Fred Myrow, a friend of his who was working with the New York Philharmonic, like he told him in a conversation, like, I need to find a way to keep myself creatively fresh with the Doors. I don't want to become a nostalgia act.
Right.
I just don't want to go out there doing the same things over and over again. I'm a real artist. I want to change. I want to see what else I can do. So he was struggling with how to remain, well, also at the same time, how to meet everyone's expectations that he would continue to be a highly original, artist as lead singer for the Doors. At the same time, I think he just wanted to move on somehow. He was struggling with how to move on. Some
Right.
people who knew him before he left for Paris and LA said that he was done with the Doors. Other people in the Doors and knew him said no, he had no intention of leaving the Doors. He was going to come back and we were going to do another record. I think was just a lot of things going on with him.
Right.
And he did tell Bill Siddons that, like, I just don't know who I am anymore. And the attempt was to go back to Paris, I think partly was to put him back in touch. He wanted to go back in touch with being a poet,
Yeah.
with being a writer and doing that. So who knows what could have happened
Right.
if he had survived, if he was able to get through like the criminal case in Miami and perhaps like get healthy again from the drinking. I mean, we can his physical change is just so noticeable in a short amount of time from like that live, very healthy looking person he was in 1965 and 66 and 67 towards like 70 and 71, where he's gained a lot of weight. He looks like he's aged many years. He put decades of living in about 5 or 6 years, and that tells you just how much Jim Morrison went through, because he had great physical stamina. So to have deteriorated, will have worn yourself like that fast, says what he had been through. Plus, a big part of this is that when you're opening up to that other reality and the way that people are discovering at this time, Henry Miller said, like, people of my time are like just artists, writers. We're discovering electricity. We don't know anything about insulation.
Yeah.
We're just like, wow, off the wall. We have found this other place in our peak experiences. And I included, I think in the book, where Ian Astbury talks about when he was on tour with the Doors, and out of anybody, he can get a sense of who Jim Morrison was just by being in that part of like the diamond of the Doors there up front. And it was a hard place to be, he said. He's like, there was just so much spiritual electricity coursing through him. Ram Dass talks about that, like the electricity of spiritual awakening. So none of us can really possibly imagine what Jim Morrison was experiencing who he was and the agreements that he made to do what he did, what was coming through him. And I think that had a toll. And I just think he was struggling with the way, how do I move on? How do I remain creative and fresh? How do I take care of myself? Like, how do I protect myself from the forces in society that I know are coming against me? Unfortunately, like, he couldn't get past this at 27. I don't want to go there with all the Saturn
Right.
return turning and all that kind of stuff,
Yeah.
because astrology is a tool to ballpark you and things like that, but in the end
Yeah.
we're all completely unique.
Yeah, for sure.
So he just wasn't able to get past that.
Yeah. Yeah. And my understanding is that at his grave, people are still going visiting his grave. So his legacy continues, I think.
Yes.
And what would you say is his greatest legacy and his relevance today?
So it's really, that's a great question. Well, he keeps, here it is 50 years later after his death, and we're still, a lot of, people like us are still talking about him. We're still fascinated with him, and he still has a really freeing effect on us. When Ray Manzarek asked one of the Doors fans at a Doors concert back then, like, why do you love the Doors so much? What does it do for you? He's like, well, I feel freedom. I feel free. And that's the effect that Jim Morrison has on us, freedom. It's that Sagittarius in them. Like, Sagittarius is like, they got to have their freedom. Like, jail to them is like, whoa, no way, So that's, he's going to be with us like every other secret teacher has for centuries. We're going to know him for a long time, I think. We're going to see like his exceptionality, in that start of rock and music back then, because that's why I wanted to write this book. I wanted to show that he has a place in the centuries old, Western esoteric tradition, just for like the warrior-like stance to step up and show us this other reality at a time when, we have to start waking up to this, that's part of it, because it's beautiful and it's necessary, and it brings balance to life, and that's how that's how we're going to remember him. I think it was really, really awesome that his father went to an old Greek teacher of his to look for the right kind of inscription for his headstone. And he found a Greek, he put in Greek, true to his own spirit. And I was watching Lana Del Rey, clip the other day where she was saying that it takes a lot of courage and bravery, like, to make your own path, because you got to shut out a lot of culture and you got to put up with a lot of garbage, to really make your way and stay true to yourself.
Right.
And boy, Jim Morrison is like, he's the number one champion of that, one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's why I think people, they realize with him that there's latitude to find themselves, to be yourself. Like, I think the when you look at those pictures of Jim Morrison, where he's his very mysterious stare that he has, so those eyes, they kind of remind me of like Peter O'Toole, that scene in Lawrence of Arabia. He's looking into the camera like those great eyes that Peter O'Toole had, and you can hear the soldier on the other side of the canal say, "Who are you? Who are you?" And that's what Jim Morrison like asked with those eyes, like, "I know who I am." Like, "Who are you?" Just gives you the space to figure out who you are. That's a freedom,
Yeah.
and that's, I think, what out of many things he's going to be remembered for. That's the secret teacher in him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, it was a very interesting book and it made me want to read more about Jim Morrison now.
Great.
Yeah, so let me ask you, I know that we are running out of time here, but what are you working on next? What have you got coming up?
So that's a good question too. So when I started writing when the pandemic hit, and I was living in a small town in Sonoma County, north of San Francisco, called Sebastopol, and suddenly, everything just shut down, and I'd gotten the idea to write this book. I made a commitment to it in the fall of 2019. Actually, like, snapshot of the moment, like at 11/11 on November 11th. And so when the national emergency hit in March 2020, I was like, well, I'm just going to get to work writing and researching, because I'm a musician and there's just no place to play, and we're not moving anywhere for quite a while. I know, Trump was out to going like, "Oh, this is going to end in 3 weeks." And I'm like, no, these things go on for like 2 or 3 years. Like, we're going to be
Right.
here for a while. I knew that. So I started writing on the day that Trump declared a national emergency, and then I ended writing literally on the day, like a few hours before I found out that Biden signed a law ending the national emergency, which I was like, wow, talk about, timing.
Yeah.
So now I'm going back into music. Just posted like a video on my website of my first music video. Going back into writing, into poetry, going back into creative outlets. My friends are like, look, that's enough Jim Morrison. Now we have to get back to to who you are.
Right.
I feel really, really fortunate that not only could I, go through my own like spiritual awakening, but at the same time, be able to write this book. Because I really wanted to show people that this part of Jim Morrison, because I feel like it's very important. And I wasn't finding any other book about this, so I
Yeah.
guess I'm going to be the one to write it. But now I want to go in the direction of being creative again.
Okay, wonderful. And what's your website?
PaulWild.com.
Okay, wonderful. I will put a link for that in the show notes in the video description, as well as a link for the book. And I just wanted to add that, yes, I think this is really important. I lived in Southern California for 19 years, and Venice Beach is no longer Jim Morrison's Venice Beach. And it seems like we need a voice like that to kind of shock us out of what Venice Beach has become, if
Yeah.
that makes sense.
Gosh, completely. My friend came up to me today. He works in Venice Beach. He said, "I don't think Jim Morrison would hang around here today at
Yeah,
all."
no.
Like, I don't think so either. It's a shame because I love Venice Beach.
Yeah, I
And
do too, but
it's become very loud. I mean, Google has opened up like their big office there, and it's
yeah.
attracted a lot of tech millionaires. Actually, some of them are actually billionaires, and it's changed dramatically. It's
Yeah.
just change, but you have to find a way to be yourself, no matter where you are, what's going
Right.
on. That to me, like, that probably a good place to end. Like,
Yeah.
right now the fight is it really takes that Jim Morrison warrior spirit in everyone, to remain a human being, to remain in touch with the other reality, to remain fresh and creative in our own lives, or we're just gonna get overtaken with all like the comforts that our society is falling into. Like, many people are sliding into that gulf, that
Yeah.
autopilot, what Colin Wilson called the robot.
Right.
That comfort zone is really dangerous.
Yeah, it
And
is.
in Venice Beach, and everywhere I see that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So yeah, Jim Morrison remains relevant.
Yes, he
So
does.
all right, Paul. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciated the conversation.
Thank you.
And I encourage people to pick up a copy of Jim Morrison, Secret Teacher of the Occult. It's a good read. And that's a wrap on episode 161 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you are part of my YouTube audience. Now, you know what's coming up next. All the usual. Sign up for my Patreon, share this with friends and family, and on social media too, please. Or subscribe and follow the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the drill. But here's the thing, all that is really important. Sharing, subscribing, or following are all free, and they really do help. Right now, putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I'm in the process of making changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the front range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, psychedelics and consciousness, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be at peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.